So I think this panel is particularly interesting. All the panels are very interesting, but this one, you know, we have here institutions that are actively looking at the Greek market as an investment destination. So let's listen to what they have to say.
Good evening. Good afternoon, rather. First of all, should we wait? No, that's not. Okay. Let us first of all thank the organizers, especially Nick and Olga Bornosis, and all the sponsors, as well as the panelists of this panel, Ms. Sabina German, next to me, Ms. Andrea Engel, Ms. Irini Botonaki, and Mr. Nicholas Chenet. If we can begin, possibly. Since you all, and this is clear from the program, work for IFIs and represent IFIs in high positions, would you like to begin by explaining the interest that Greece presents for IFIs with them re-engaging or enhancing their presence in Greece? How do you expect this trend to continue from now on, and how do you expect things to develop? Would you like to start? Well, let's take it like this.
For EBRD, Greece became a country of operation last year. I think in February our shareholders approved it. Documents were signed in May, and I think the Greek Parliament ratified those documents in November. I myself came out in September last year and have been here permanently. Interesting, Greece, I think as we all know, it went through and is going through a very prolonged economic crisis. And given EBRD's expertise in helping to rebuild some economies of the former Soviet Union, it seemed like a good idea. Of course, when the original idea was brought to bear, the reality was somewhat different. Entering Greece last year was a very interesting and turbulent time to start operations. But I'm pleased to say to date, we've done about $400 million in business, and we're continuing to work. Irrespective of what's going on, I think we will find good projects to finance.
Andrea, would you like to elaborate on this one?
So, thank you. From the side of IFC, and for those of you that don't know IFC, we are the private sector arm of the World Bank Group. The World Bank is also very engaged in Greece, but more on the regulatory front. But very similar to EBRD, we also received a request to re-engage, re-engage, because we had been investing in Greece and we exited the country in the early 80s. So once we got the request from the Greek government, we also had to get approval from our board, which we got. And we also, look at this as, we hope, a temporary re-engagement. And I say we hope because we do expect and hope that things will pick up. There are some precedents for IFC to re-engage in countries that, in our vocabulary, have graduated, basically, from World Bank lending, then also IFC exits. So we do have the example of Korea, where IFC re-engaged during the Asian financial crisis, and we stayed 3 years on the ground, and then things picked up, and then we left again. So in our case, we also are looking at a temporary re-engagement, and once things pick up and the IFIs are not longer needed, so the private sector can do its job, then we will exit the country. In our case, we have invested to date $150 million in the Greek banks, and obviously, like our colleagues here, actively developing the pipeline and hope to do more soon. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Yes. EAF started operations in Greece in 1999, and since then we have been uninterruptedly present in the market. For those of you that don't know us very well, EAF is a subsidiary of the European Investment Bank, and more specifically, it is the arm that focuses on improving access to finance for SMEs, and we do that through the provision of guarantees to banks that lend to SMEs, and by investing in private equity and venture capital funds that in turn invest in SMEs. To date, we have committed some €280 million for the support of SMEs through intermediaries that have resulted in the mobilization of some €700 million in financing for SMEs. What is important to note is that during the past years and as the crisis has evolved in Greece, we have seen increased interest in our activities and in the products that we have to offer, which is something that is purely and clearly understandable. As banks are faced with liquidity and capital, regulatory capital constraints, they have reduced their capacity in lending, so there is a need for ways to assist them in their lending activities. Same goes for a need for alternative sources of financing, where our venture capital and private equity commitments make a lot of sense. As my predecessor said, we are also here to stay, and we hope that we can help the country going forward.
Still the same thing, please.
Well, thank you very much, Alex. So my name is Nicholas Jennett. I'm head of the EIB's investment team for Greece, based here in Athens. You asked the question, why Greece, why now? Well, as Irini has actually said, the EIB group is the financing arm of the European Union. Greece is a shareholder of the EIB. The predominant role of EIB is indeed to support sound investment projects in the member states of the European Union. We work outside the European Union as well, but the 90% of our lending is within the EU. And so it's natural that the EIB group should have been, as it has been, present in Greece before the crisis, during the crisis, and we'll certainly be here after the crisis. Last year, the bank financed or signed some €1.3 billion worth of transactions here in Greece. But historically, over the last number of years, the focus of our lending in Greece has tended to be on public sector operations or operations that are guaranteed by the public sector. What's changed for us now is that we're now looking to balance that by complementing that public sector lending by a new focus on private sector. And that's why one of the reasons that we're actually so pleased and excited that we have our colleagues from EBRD and IFC also operating in the Greek market now. So that's the why, and that's the change.
Would you like to continue this one, and we'll take it the other way around this time, regarding the tools that IFIs use? You began mentioning the increased interest of private sector guarantees.
Yeah. Well, yes, I'll certainly say something about the tools. I was reflecting on the title of this panel and really the purpose of this whole discussion, which is about investing for growth. Frankly, I think bankers should be very modest when they talk about their role in investing for growth. The fact of the matter is that we as bankers can't make growth happen. We can facilitate growth when ideas are brought forward by entrepreneurs, and sadly we can also choke off or prevent growth when we're not available to finance sound investment projects. So the issue for us is what can we best do to facilitate the investments that are needed in both the public and private sector to underpin growth. And this really should drive the tools that are available to us. Now, probably the most significant tool that we have in the toolbox at the moment is the ability to take risk. This is what's required above all. But it's important to say that when we're talking about taking risk, there's kind of two sorts of financial risk. There's gambling risk, where on a portfolio level we know we always lose, and there's banking risk, where on a portfolio level we and our clients should be able to win. So it's the bank, EIB, partly because of the financial support that's been given to EIB through the so-called Juncker Plan, the investment plan for Europe, across the group, we have a very significantly increased capacity to take risk. That's what we'll be looking to deploy. But extremely important, that needs to be bankable risk and certainly not gambling risk.
This is clear, so if you could add, and especially turning it, how also does this translate into opportunities for entrepreneurs, especially in innovation?
Yes, thank you. Continuing on what Nick just started saying, the Juncker Plan, the European Fund for Strategic Investment, which is a very important addition in the firepower that our group has in its interventions, is also something that we will also use extensively going forward. What this Juncker Plan does for the EIF is that it increases the capacity that we have in order to deploy our guarantees and private equity and venture capital commitments with our intermediaries in the next few years. So there are two sets of distinct products that we primarily use. One is guarantees. We give guarantees to banks for them to give loans to SMEs. Our capacity there has increased a lot, and this is something that also the Greek intermediaries, Greek banks, can make use of. And I will give you the example of the first signature that we had last month with ProCredit in Thessaloniki that made use of Innofin, one of our flagship programs. And then, on the other hand, we also have the increase in firepower that we have in order to make commitments with private equity and venture capital funds that invest in SMEs. Innovation. We see a lot of this firepower being diverted towards innovation. One of our programs, as I mentioned, is Innofin, that focuses on innovative SMEs and foresees a guarantee window as well as a private equity window for funds to be able to make use of. And as of the investment opportunities for other investors, allow me to remind you that, or more state that we always, in the case of private equity and venture capital interventions, we always participate as a minority investor in the funds that we invest in, which means that by definition, the fund managers need to fundraise and crowd in other private investors in their funds. So this, for sure, translates into opportunities for investors to explore and make use of and also participate in the Greek market indirectly.
Thank you. Would you like to add something?
Yes. I think what I would like to say to start off with is that as IFIs, we are all active in Greece, and you might wonder, you know, the Greek market not being so so big, does this mean that all IFIs, we are competing in a nasty way? So that's not the case,
in a nice way,
sometimes, but in most times that we work actually very well together, and we are very complementary, because when it comes to, for instance, innovation, I think actually the tools that the EIB group has at its disposal through the Juncker Plan is probably something that we don't have. So there I would say it would be the EIB group probably taking the lead, just because we don't have these types of instruments. So I think, you know, it is important, and we are doing it, that we work closely together, and when whoever has a competitive edge takes the lead on behalf of the IFIs. So on the side of IFC, I mean, we have a specific mandate in the country, but we're not really limited in terms of which instruments we can use. So whatever instruments IFC has at its disposal, we can use them in Greece as well, which in our case, you know, is debt, equity, trade finance, the usual IFC instruments. But I think where we see, you know, in our case, what we will try to do is not so much about how much we as IFC will be investing in Greece. We want to, you know, see our success being and how much we are able to mobilize, both, as you were saying, Greek investors, but also international investors, get international banks back into the country. So it's very much about the signaling and the investor confidence. So we hope to be doing more mobilization going forward. I think this is our big strategic priority for IFC.
Thank you. Please.
So yeah, we have.
Sorry.
We're very friendly competition. We have worked over the years. I've done several transactions with IFC and also with EIB. But that's good for the market. You know, you want a bit of competition. That's what we're trying to promote. So again, like Andrea said with IFC, we don't have the advantages of the Juncker Plan. We hope to work with EIB as they need co-financiers, and we're counted as purely private sector In fact, our mandate requires us to do a minimum of 60% in the private sector. At the moment, we do about 80%. Now, given we've had 25 years throughout the Soviet Union, which started off as all public sector, I think that's a pretty good record. And those 25 years in some quite challenging countries has given us, I think, quite a healthy risk appetite. I think if you lend in Tajikistan or invest in a bank in Turkmenistan, then, you know, finding opportunities in a country like Greece are not so challenging. Now, the risk appetite that we have is inevitably different from an external, not an inter. Greek banks have got, as I think we now know, have had very healthy risk appetites, hence the Enakafalai PSC last year. But I think that banks outside of Greece still see Greece from a country risk perspective as very risky. And that's where we also, as international financial institutions, play a very important role. So, for example, we put in 50 million into OTE's bond issue last year, which was the first time they'd gone back to the market since the crisis. We weren't responsible for bringing the entire 250 million in, but they did raise 250. Now, on the surface, you might say, well, what's that got to do with entrepreneurship or growth? Well, you know, that funding partly goes to increasing access to high-speed broadband, and everybody knows that high-speed broadband is fundamental for growth of SMEs. On the back of that fairly successful bond issue, I think you all know Titan went back to the markets last week, or the week before, sorry, I've had a week's holiday, so it's disappeared. Their bond was oversubscribed four times. There were buyers for €1 billion of Titan bonds. So there we scaled back. We had approval for 50 million, but clearly, you know, our ability or our willingness to participate may have contributed to that. So we scaled back and we took 15 million. So I think it's all about providing confidence to help other investors come in, as well as looking at some projects on an individual basis.
Thank you. But then to continue it from this, have you identified sectors which are or appear to be more promising in order for Greece to be helped, especially towards this path to growth?
I think the sectors, tourism clearly contributes enormously to GDP. In fact, we don't see so many opportunities in that sector because it's something that's very well served by the Greek banks, and we're not here to compete with the Greek banks. If there were an opportunity where we could add value and see that we were bringing something different to the table, of course we would get involved. So I think the sectors, agribusiness is something where I think there's huge opportunities for Greece. But I think we look at projects more on a case-by-case basis, and I think we have to find, the question I always ask myself is why EBRD and why this transaction? Because if we can't find a reason for EBRD to be involved, then, you know, we should leave it to other banks. We're not here to do everything. So we need to bring something to the table over and above or different from other banks, be they outside of Greece or internal ones. So I think we look at more on a project basis than sectors per se.
And if you can link this project to innovation and speaking whether, we discussed this earlier, I think, whether new technology is indelibly linked to innovation or whether you're looking for something else, not necessarily technology related.
Okay, so on innovation specifically, I think probably the colleagues to my left, they have tools that would be more relevant. And I want to pick up on the point that Nick said about bankable projects, although we are here to, you know, hopefully not displace the Greek banks, but come in where we need it. On the other hand, it also means that we need to look at projects that are bankable. So it doesn't mean, you know, that because we are IFIs, we can take such risks that we can get involved in projects that are not sustainable. I think, and I agree with Sabina also in terms of taking a project-by-project approach. I think, obviously, and all of us are involved in different shapes and formats. The financial sector is one where we are all have as a priority, and one that really is very important, also linked to innovation and startups and all of this, because we all know how much SMEs are so much of the economic fabric of the country, and one of the issues we need to kickstart again is the lending to small enterprises and to startups through private equity funds and other ways. But so this is a big priority right now, obviously, dealing with NPLs and getting credit to flow back. And the other big, I don't know if we can call it sector, but a lot of opportunities obviously arising on privatizations, on the logistics front. So these are sort of the big ones. Tourism as well, they're a big contributor to growth, but there we haven't decided either yet if there is a role for IFC or not. But I think we probably approach it in the same way. We have some priority sectors, but we would look at anything that comes our way.
Thank you, Ms. Butonaki.
Yes, in our case, we take a different approach due to the way that we operate as the European Investment Fund, meaning that we always deploy our interventions via partner intermediaries, typically banks in the case of guarantees, and private equity and venture capital funds in the case of equity interventions. So rather than us selecting the projects in which we will invest in or which we will fund, we leave it up to our intermediaries, our partner intermediaries, to do that. We sign an agreement with them that sets the basic terms of operations, the perimeter, what are the eligibility criteria, etc. But then the origination, selection, assessment, and investment or funding process is left with our partner, who selects the sectors, if they will have any sectoral focus in their activities. So, in principle, we do not have any sectoral preference. Again, we examine the proposals that we receive, so we are waiting from our partner intermediaries to do this for us and suggest what would be the optimal proposal and what the funding gaps are there to be filled, and we strike an agreement with them. Specifically on innovation, yes, we do have, let's say, a natural tendency to support this sector, primarily through our equity intervention, where startups in general tend to be innovative, they have something new to bring in. So yes, our equity interventions are also, to a large extent, naturally, I would say, directed in that sector. So we are like a focus supporter of innovation. But again, this is done via our partner intermediaries.
Thank you.
I think it's natural that we look for innovative companies because we're looking for growing companies. And in a competitive market, it's usually innovation of some form or another that gives the competitive advantage. So maybe the best way I can answer the question actually is with an example, if I might. The first of the, many of you may know that the first of the transactions that we signed under the Juncker Plan, the European Fund for Strategic Investments, the first direct operation here in Greece was with a very high quality and innovative food processing company called Kreta Farms. And the purpose of the financing was indeed to help Kreta Farm accelerate their innovation program, an innovation program for which they hold a number of worldwide patents. For those of you that don't know the company, the core of their innovative offer is that they have technologies for removing saturated fats from meat products and substituting olive oils for those. So that's a double win. There's a health benefit, and also, of course, there's the health benefit of the reduced saturated fats, but also from the use of Cretan and Greek olive oils. The company wanted to grow. It needed finance to grow. And the way that we were able to look at this company, in a sense, I mention this because it illustrates what I mean by a bankable proposition. we were able to look at financing the growth case for this company. In other words, our loan is predicated on the fact that the company will indeed achieve growth. So in a way, we almost looked at the loan the way that an equity investor would look at a company. Do we buy the growth story? And do we think this is the management team to actually deliver it? And the answer to both those questions was categorically yes. We absolutely bought the growth story, and absolutely we thought it was the right management team to deliver. So the ability to use this higher risk-taking capacity to make what are in effect quasi-equity investments in innovative and growing companies is really the core of what we're looking to use the additional risk-taking capacity of the Juncker Plan for.
Thank you. But now, instead of limiting it to a company, what conditions can you identify that need to be fulfilled for this whole country to hope to return to growth?
Confidence.
Please.
I mean, the transaction that Nick just talked about is quite rare. You know, we've talked to quite a lot of companies, and I've had a bit of an impression they're holding back. Everyone's not completely convinced yet that, you know, going forward, it's all going to be good. And, you know, companies need confidence to actually want to come and borrow money to implement an investment plan that brings growth. All companies want to grow. I think that goes without saying, or at least grow some part of their company. But having the confidence to borrow money to implement an investment plan is what's needed. And, you know, we're not being inundated. We have capacity to do more than we're doing, and we're not inundated with those, you know, ideal projects from companies that are not too over-leveraged, who've got really interesting investment plans that are going to bring about the growth that we all want. So I think a bit more confidence in the market from investors in Greece and also from foreign investors is what we need.
Thank you. Would you like to add something?
I mean, I tend to agree, so I don't have much to add on that. I think Sabina said that very nicely and beautifully. Maybe just to bring a different perspective, echoing some of the work that other organizations, for instance, the World Bank, but I think others are engaged too, are doing is obviously anything that can be done to continue to reduce the regulatory burden on companies, and in particular on small companies, is also quite important. I think it was OECD that recently came out with a study to say that, you know, Greece is one of the most regulated countries. So it's not about deregulation, it's about smart regulation, you know, to try and find that balance between doing what you need to do through regulation without stifling growth and in particular that of the SMEs. I think this is also something where the government is very engaged on it, but I think this is also part of that puzzle.
Thank you. Please.
I agree with both colleagues. I would add to the confidence also the stability that perhaps is one step before we can start to regain confidence. So we definitely need some stability in the country so that companies can deliver their plans, their business plans, and then confidence can start to be built by investors and we can see some growth in the country.
As I said in my opening comments, as financiers, we need to be modest about our role here. It's the entrepreneurs that make the growth, be those entrepreneurs in the private sector or entrepreneurs in the public sector. All we can do is, if we do our jobs properly, we can facilitate. If we don't do our jobs properly, we can block. But the confidence, stability, a perspective, all these things are absolutely critical to entrepreneurs making that leap. And as Sabina said, we need more of them to do so. We have more capacity to lend and invest than we're using at the moment.
I think that that's the main message, because without entrepreneurs coming up with the ideas and coming to organizations and IFIs such as yours in order to seek facilitation of making those ideas a reality, there is no way to achieve stability, no way to regain confidence, and at the end of the day, the regulatory matter comes in third place. just an incident that happened to a client of mine. There was a startup company, and there were people trying to create an application for an iPhone, and they were young guys, 20 years old. They were working whatever time. The Inspection of Employment found out and fined them more than the startup capital altogether. So at the end of the day, the state did not get the fine. The people did not manage to create the app, and nobody gained anything at all. Stating this, in your experience, do you find significant differences between this economy as it is right now and other economies in similar situations that you found, that you've seen, and things that could be tackled in order to facilitate what you're doing here? Sorry.
Well, I think the one thing that it's a terribly disappointing story, because actually one of the things I admire about Greeks is their ingenuity in getting around the rules. And I think we all know what I'm talking about, but I would have thought they could have coped one way or another, but that's disappointing that they didn't. I think the confidence is the key question, and you can add everything into that word. You know, the stability, the government, the environment, the regulation, the level of tax. You know, the money is available. From Greek banks are starting to lend again, and I'm sure they're going to start to lend more as their situations improve. We're all here. Now, that doesn't mean that we can hand out little $50,000, $100,000 loans to the sorts of entrepreneurs that Alexios has mentioned. That's not our role. We can't do that. That comes into, you know, seed capital, startup capital. There's a lot of quite wealthy Greeks out there who might like to bring some money into the country in some sort of peer-to-peer platforms. You know, the money's there, but I think until there's a bit more confidence in the future, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to this point, but just to say, you were saying, how does it compare to other countries? And I always say, like, an investment climate is not a static thing. Reforms need to happen all the time. But this is basically what I meant, that you have a regulatory environment that supports startup and innovation, and not one that puts so many hurdles in the way. And this is, again, it's not just, you know, it's not about Greece, it's a general comment. That we're seeing also now, you know, in the Doing Business report, you see there are improvements that can be done in many other developed countries, including in Europe and elsewhere. So again, it's a continuous thing and should be looked at like that.
I would say that each country is obviously unique, has its own challenges and its own opportunities. So we tend to take a rather like tailor-made approach to the extent possible to address the issues that we see in each country. So I would not make any generalizations. Every country is specific and a country of its own when it comes to challenges and opportunities.
If I can, I'd like to turn the question around, because I'm a natural optimist. Being English this week, I better be a natural optimist. And to be clear, I'm talking about the Euro Championships. We haven't been knocked out yet. We still believe we might win it anyway. I'd rather turn it around and say, in comparison to other countries, where do I see the comparative and absolute advantages of Greece? And frankly, I see very many. Greece is a country that is full of smart, highly educated people with a phenomenal facility with languages, both in Greece and outside. It's a country which has an extremely international outlook. And is extremely, and I've benefited myself from it being a country which is extremely welcoming to the international community. And finally, Greece is a country with the most incredible natural capital endowment, which sets it aside from many of its other competitors. So actually, let's focus on those comparative and absolute advantages, and those should provide a good basis for a for a future growth story for this country.
Thank you, especially since I'm a pessimist by nature. And I live here also, so.
Greeks always complain.
Yeah, we always complain. It's our natural sport. Okay. I think what we can keep mainly from this thing is that there are opportunities, that the IFIs are here, they're there, and it's up to individual and private entrepreneurs to find the ideas, create the business plans, and come to you for help and advice on this one. So I would like to thank you very, very much, Ms. Sabina German, from Director of Greece and Cyprus from the EBRD, Ms. Andrea Engel, Country Manager for Greece from the IFC, Ms. Irini Botonaki, Regional Business Development Greece and Cyprus from the European Investment Fund, and Mr. Nicholas Jennett, Deputy Director General from the European Investment Bank. Thank you very much.